Hello and welcome to the London Philharmonic Orchestra's May podcast. I'm Edward Seckerson. This month I'm focusing on Debut Sounds, an unusual concert which takes place on the 14th of May and showcases two of the orchestra's programmes for talented young artists. I wonder if, like me, you bristle when you hear someone say of music, "Well, I know what I like," meaning, of course, "I like what I know." Surely we all need to keep exploring outside our comfort zones, to make discoveries, to try something new, and to keep on trying. Otherwise, classical music is going to become a museum culture. And like any creative art form, music needs to keep evolving. Step forward then, the London Philharmonic Orchestra's Young Composers Project. Each season, a handful of composers work closely with the orchestra in a series of workshops to create and develop a new work. The orchestra's outgoing composer in residence, Mark Anthony Turnage, and fellow composer Jonathan Cole have given generously with their feedback and mentoring. And you can hear the results in Debut Sounds on the 14th of May at the South Bank Centre's Queen Elizabeth Hall, when works by Tristan Brooks, Aaron Parker, Issa Khan and Sasha Seem are given their world premieres. The performing ensemble is interesting too, a mixture of Foyle Future Firsts, talented young musicians from this year's Orchestral Apprenticeship Programme, and members of the London Philharmonic Orchestra. You can find out more about the composers and the other works featured in the concert on www.lpo.org.uk/debutsounds. Now, the workshops and the concert are conducted by Clement Power, and I spoke to him about the difference this access can make to composers. I started by asking him what made the LPO Young Composers Scheme stand apart from other such projects.
Well, the big difference is that for this, they have a series of workshops that are spread throughout the better part of a year. So unlike what happens in other places often, which is they turn up terribly stressed with their big scores and the big orchestra plays their piece and they're overwhelmed by the effect of it and then they go away, and they do learn a lot, but they can't then put that into practice directly. Whereas the idea behind the LPO project is for them to turn up at the first workshop really with sketches, with tiny things, sometimes as small as a set of chords that need to be rescored and reorchestrated, small fragments, and then the next workshop they have a good 2 months to turn that into the genesis of a piece, and then another 2 months, and then they turn it into what's a sort of embryonic baby piece, and then hopefully by the time of the concert they have something that's actually a fully fledged.
How many workshops are there in fact then
we have three workshops, and we have four composers, so they share out the time in each workshop.
Okay. If someone does come in with just a series of chords, for example, presumably they will present to you their idea for where this might go, and what do you give your reactions as to whether what the pitfalls might be in that concept? Or,
well, I try to look at it quite positively. I mean, the compositional side, the sort of structural, I guess, aesthetic side, is in a way more in the hands of Mark Turnage and Jonathan Cole, who are the composers on board of the project. I suppose my role is to try to turn their ideas into concrete sounds that work on the instruments. Yes. And of course that's not just my job, that's also the instrumentalist's job. And what we've tried to encourage, the breaking down of the sort of horrible wall that sometimes exists between composers and their interpreters. And we've tried to allow a sort of constructive conduits between the players, sort of mediated through me to the composers,
right,
so that they work out quickly what works and what doesn't.
Yes, you had a slight smile on your face when you said a constructive conduit. You know, you can imagine that some bassoon player saying, "You don't really expect me to play this on this instrument."
Well, the LPO is rather extraordinarily patient and responsive bunch of people, I must say, and they. are very good at phrasing something that could be construed negatively in a positive way, rather than doing it like this, you could get the same sound like that. And that's sort of that's what this project is all about.
Tell us a little bit about the specific composers in this particular project at the moment, which culminates in the concert on the 14th of May, which I gather has opened out now. It's at the Queen Elizabeth Hall, so
that's
it's
right.
A bigger gig than was before. Mm-hmm. Are the instrumental forces bigger as well?
Yes, rather bigger. Rather than having single strings, they have a small string section, three violins, and you know it's a slightly beefier lineup than before. Yeah.
So to tell us about them individually in a thumbnail sketch, what they've attempted to do and where they're coming from. Because one of the things, Clement, that I feel about, I don't know whether you agree, about young composers nowadays, is that they tend to be very vertical in their composition. So it's about texture rather than the great art of melodic and harmonic writing.
And structural writing. Yeah. Though I would say that the four that we have approached the project quite differently, each one. I suppose there are two broad ways you could approach it. One is to think of it as an orchestra, you have a mini orchestra, actually not that mini, and you can write an orchestral texture. And Aaron Parker, who's I think the youngest of the four, has really gone for a sort of, I won't say traditional, but definitely an orchestral, lots of doubling, that kind of sound world. By contrast, the other way I think of looking at it is to see, as you say, the group more like a sort of smorgasbord of timbres that you can pick and choose from and combine. Someone who's done that quite a lot is Issa Khan, who's produced a very interesting, strange, static, sort of ribbon-like piece with the curious, plangent sounds of these Beggen guitars that he asks the string players to double. So that's like a sort of almost like a mobile that sort of hangs in space and turns with strange little scrunchy sounds coming out of that. There is Sasha Siem, who also has taken the timbre idea very seriously and has basically taken quite a short, almost like a small folk-ish melody. The piece is called Queen Anne's Lace, which I think is a kind of flower or plant, and she's reorchestrated it many, many times, very strangely, quite delicately and strangely. So that's an example of a real really using the project for coloristic purposes. And then lastly, there's, I suppose, yet another approach, which is taken by Tristan Brooks. He has really treated it like a contemporary music ensemble, and he has used all sorts of extended techniques and also lots of extra instruments, such as glass bottles and cardboard tubes and so forth, and has really turned it into almost like a sort of sound installation, which is close to, I think his inspiration is actually of a sculpture, which is like an enormous granitic wall sculpture. So it's a very massive and very, very, not aggressive, but very, very massive and granulated and dark kind of piece.
I'm curious to know whether
any of these pieces you felt really were moved forward in interesting ways with the notes that were given about them? Because this is, after all, what the project's all about.
Yeah, definitely. There's the piece that Issa Khan wrote started off, and I'm sure he won't mind me saying this, as a big load of stuff going on all at the same time. And it was, you know, he'd had loads and loads of ideas. But the problem was that once he heard them, he realised that all the sounds were happening all at the same time. Yeah. And actually, you just couldn't take it all on board. So I think what he did was almost like he sort of cut it in half lengthways and stuck it out long ways, if you see what I mean. So he just extended the material so you could actually comprehend it and hear it. And now it's much clearer what's going on in that piece. But at the start, it was quite chaotic. It was full of ideas, too many ideas.
How many of these young composers do you think will actually become composers? They're already composers.
I mean, I'm skeptical about this idea of a profession, I must say, among composers. And I know that people have to live and they have to eat their bread and cheese, but I suspect that it's become... One of the problems is that the idea of a career in composition has become a bit ossified. You know, you have to win certain competitions and then you get certain structure of commissions, which I think kids people into the idea that they're having a progression. And I think what's more important is, I know this sounds terribly 19th century and romantic, but just really to write good music. I mean, we have, for example, in the same program, we have a small Ravel song set, the Mallarmé songs. And I mean, Ravel failed again and again to win any prizes. I mean, he was kicked out of his the class with Fauré because he didn't win the prize for fugue, he didn't win the prize for harmony, and then he didn't win the Prix de Rome, and it was a big scandal. And you know, he sort of failed his way to the top.
There are other pieces in the program as well that I mean, quite a nice idea of the Strauss wind serenade.
Well, that's a student piece, you see. He was at the University of Munich at when he wrote that. So yeah, that's a. And incidentally, he does a typical student thing at the end of that piece, because there are two bars at the end for double bass, just two bars, just the last cadence. It's absolutely bizarre. It's never done, and I suppose we could do it, but I'm not sure. Don't know whether we will or not. But that's an example. Just shows, you see, that Strauss also had his little moments.
Yeah.
Complete nuttiness.
And actually, a nice foil to that, in a way, that is the Stravinsky, the Dumbarton Notes.
Yeah, which is a totally achieved piece.
Yes.
Yeah. But also relating to past models.
And of course, the important people in this project are the composers themselves. What has the experience been like, and what kind of music have they written? Well, these recordings were made at the workshops and give you a chance to, if you like, preview the world premiere.
Hi, I'm Aaron Parker. I'm one of the young composers for this year's LPO Young Composer Scheme. There are basically three workshops throughout the year. So we each brought sketches to the first workshop for these pieces and tried different things out. And these workshops are very useful, because if there's something that happens or something that comes out of the rehearsal you're not happy with, you can just at that point ask Clement and say, can you change things? Can we experiment with things? So it's a wonderful process. I basically wrote my piece sequentially so that the first few seconds I had prepared for the first workshop. By the second workshop, it was sort of half the piece. By the third workshop, it was nearly complete. We also get recordings after each of these we've worked up, so we can take them home and listen to them and see what bits don't work. And it's a very, very useful process, very instructive.
Hi. Hi, I'm Issa Khan. I'm one of the London Philharmonic Orchestra's young composers this year. So the piece begins with a statement of the sound, which is essentially what the piece is based on. And throughout the piece, this becomes clarified. And through the clarification, it kind of decays and withdraws itself down to a complete stillness. It's a really sonically unusual piece of music, in which there are constants all the way through. There's something which happens all the way through, but I don't think that's something which you particularly realise. It's only when it's not there that you realise it was there in the first place, and the piece basically is playing with those kind of ideas. The strange sounds which you get, a lot of them, because I have the string sections playing little one-string guitars from the Far East. So for the first workshop, I arrived with three very short fragments of music, which were all the same length. And to generate material, I kind of mixed and matched different parts of that with different players. So some might play section A, some might play section B, some might play section C, which was a way of getting myself involved in the sound and generating some kind of idea, which, as it turns out, is how the rest of the piece kind of grew from that.
Well, we're nearing the end of the 2009-10 season at the Royal Festival Hall, and this year's podcast too. And this is your chance to let us know what you've enjoyed and what you'd like to hear more or less of next year. Can you spare 2 minutes to answer a few questions by visiting www.lpo.org.uk/podcasts? And to say thank you, we'll enter you in a competition to win a selection of the orchestra's recent CD releases. Recordings. There isn't a new release on the LPO label this month, so I've chosen a work by Mark Anthony Turnage to play us out. Mark Anthony is a classic example of a composer whose audiences have grown with him. I remember hearing his music for the first time in a small airless room in the town of Montepulciano in Tuscany some 25 years ago. I remember the piece. It was a wild, unpublished piano piece. Well, how he's grown from there. Hidden Love Song for soprano saxophone and orchestra was commissioned by the LPO and was the first collaboration of Turnage's period as composer in residence. The love song, not so hidden but still elusive, was recorded in a concert in 2006, where it was performed by the soloist Martin Robertson and conductor Marin Alsop.